Dette en podcast fra Dagens Næringsliv.
Gledelig jul, kjære lytter, og velkommen til denne spesialepisoden av «Jeg kan ingenting om vin». Mitt navn det som vanlig Thomas Gjertsen. I dag så har vi en liten, hva skal vi si, romjulsgave til dere. Tidligere I høst så hadde vi besøk av Jancis Robinson på Chat Noir, og vi synes hun en såpass kul og interessant dame at vi har redigert sammen en version av den samtalen som vi tenkte noen av dere kunne ha lyst til å høre på. Så her en redigert version av vår samtale med Jancis Robinson. Fortsatt gledelig jul og god fornøyelse! Så veldig hyggelig å se så mange mennesker på en tirsdag. Velkommen til denne samtalen med Jancis Robinson, og ikke minst til vinsmaking. Merete, antar du har gledet deg kanskje aller mest av alle her I dag?
Ja, det vil jeg si. Jeg gleder meg kjempe masse til å møte Jancis igjen, og ikke minst sammen med dekan.
Vi skal ikke bare... smake vin I dag. Du skal blindsmake sammen med publikum foran Jancis. Jeg må bare si, det synes jeg jævla sportig av deg. Ja. Vi satt og diskuterte dette på jobben, og så spurte jeg, og så sa du ja. Jeg hadde aldri trodd det.
Jeg fra Voss.
Du fra Voss, ja, nettopp. Dette på en måte din variant av ekstremveko.
Ja. Ja, men jeg tenkte sånn, altså, noen må jo ha litt balle her, så da...
Det jeg tenkte, som litt gøy, at vi skal gå gjennom da en, hva skal vi si for noe, en akademisk korrekt vinsmaking, så det gått gjennom, målet at alle skal liksom vite helt sånn punktlig hvordan man skal gjøre det sånn faglig riktig, og så skal vi komme frem til en konklusjon på vinene. Det skal vi komme tilbake til etterpå.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mine damer og herrer, please welcome on stage Jancis Robinson.
This is so glamorous. I can't get over it. It's fantastic. Nothing like this has ever happened to me before.
No. You see, you're very popular.
This is amazing. Well, no, I think Norwegians just love wine.
I think it's a good thing to start. If you could tell us a little bit, why did you end up in the wine business?
Okay. Yeah. So I was brought up in a tiny little village of 40 people, the far northwest of England. When I was brought up, wine was so exotic that if anyone mentioned it, there were sort of audible quotation marks around the word, like wine, you know, like Polo, Barbados, something very exotic. So I didn't really drink wine until I got to university. And then I think for a lot of people who end up being wine professionals, probably you too, Marita, there's one particular wine that just lights the flame. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a red Burgundy, a Chambord Musigny Les Amoureuses, 1959. And I just realized that in this glass, it was so much better than student Plonk. For one thing, you smelt it and it was clean and you actually wanted to drink it, unlike 2 out of 3 bottles of wine around at that stage. And I'd realized that in this glass was something that could offer amazing sensual pleasure, but probably a lot of kind of interesting intellectual stuff as well, you know, history, geography, all that kind of thing. So I wouldn't say I got up from the table determined to get a job as a wine writer, because at that stage, and you know, younger people wouldn't believe this, wine and food had no social status in Britain at all. If I'd said to my friends I wanted to get a job in either wine or food, both things fascinated me at the time, they would have said, what a waste of an Oxford education. Really? And so I went into the travel business for 3 years. No,
but you have an Oxford education.
Yeah.
What was that?
Maths and philosophy.
Okay.
Yeah. Very easy. Yeah. Now, I looked at my exam papers the other day. Honestly, I couldn't understand a word of it. We had one paper called Mathematical Philosophy, another paper called The Philosophy of Mathematics.
Okay.
Don't know. Anyway.
How many wine bottles is that ago?
Oh, innumerable. I couldn't possibly count. Anyway, after 3 years in the travel business, I realized I was hopeless in meetings and big companies and things. And I dropped out. This was the early 70s. Everyone was dropping out then. And went to live in Provence, in the Luberon, for a year. And there, of course, I was surrounded by people for whom wine and food and eating and drinking was what life was all about. Mm-hmm. So I was determined, when I got back to London, which I knew I would do, to find a job in either wine or food. And I was very lucky, because I was taken on as assistant editor of a wine trade magazine. And I had this interview with the publisher who said, we've had a lot of applicants for this job and we're having a great deal of trouble finding the right person. And he looked, because we either have to hire a trained journalist and have to teach them all about wine, or we hire a wine expert and have to teach them how to write. And he looked down at my application form and he said, you, of course, are neither of these things. But nevertheless, you're the favorite for the job. So I've kept my eyebrows there. And after about a year, when I reckoned I'd proved myself, I asked him, why did you take me on? Was it because I'd been the restaurant correspondent for the Oxford Student Magazine, or I'd done some freelance work for the top restaurant guide, or lived in France for a year, so none of those things. Was it, I said a bit nervously, because I'd worked for a wine company temporarily, knowing that actually the wine company owned a wine bar and I was basically a barmaid, but I didn't spell that out. No, none of those things, he said. Because you'd shown that you could organise the skiing side of Thompson Holidays, which was Britain's biggest holiday company at the time. And we reckoned, we knew that you didn't know much, but we reckoned you had the organising ability to organise yourself to learn it. And he was right, actually.
Okay.
Because I went on to do wine courses and, you know, all that.
And then you started your studies to become a master of wine.
Well, first of all, there was the Dublin Wine and Spirit Education Mm-mm. Trust, and worked my way up, you know, through the elementary and intermediate and diploma. I remember the very first course that I did, there was a question which was, Valpolicella is A, French, B, Italian, or C, Spanish, you know. I mean, they did try and get the money out of you, you know, you have to ascend slowly. And I ended up doing the diploma, which is their top exam, and I, in 78, and I came top in that, and that was the only time in my life when I thought, I know everything there is to know about wine.
Okay.
And how wrong I was. I mean, only today I was in your main Vinopolet store.
Aukebrygge? By the sea?
Yeah. Okay. The one where they queue outside.
Yeah, for Burgundy, yes. Yeah.
And I was shown a label of an Austrian red wine with a grape on it that I'd never come across. And I am co-author of the book about wine grapes, which we had 1,368, we found when we researched it in about 10 years ago, but millions more now. Yeah. So I learn more every single day. And then in 1984, the Masters of Wine realized that MWs, as they're called, are not immortal. One or two started dying. And they thought, we've got to actually loosen up the rules a bit, because otherwise we're just going to crumble and die. So, because before then, you had to be in the wine trade to do the exams.
Yeah.
So in 84, they were looking for people who weren't in the wine trade, but who earned their living through wine to take the exam. And because I'd done well in the diploma, they collared me. And I'm the sort of person who you put a hurdle in front of me, and even if I've got a broken leg, I'll try and get over it. And my husband, who's here somewhere, counseled me strongly not to do it. He quite rightly pointed out that I stood to lose far more by failing than I stood to gain by passing. Because by that stage, I was the Sunday Times wine correspondent. I'd done the world's first series, television series about wine. I'd written a couple of books. I'll have a go at this horrible exam that hardly anybody passes.
Yeah, because how many Masters of Wine?
There are about 430 now, since 1953. I mean, the pass rate is about 10%, which is pretty shocking. But I was very foolish. I agreed to have this me taking the exam feature in the second series of this television series. So it really would have been a public humiliation. I was lucky. I think with all these blind tastings, there's an awful lot of luck involved. Mm-hmm. I'm not with you tonight because that's going to be pure skill. So in an exam, I think there is a lot of luck. And I did pass first time. And since I was the only wine writer who'd ever taken it, I just thought, well, obviously, if you're a wine writer, you pass the Master of Wine exam. So it wasn't a big deal. But then one or two wine writers after me started to take it and failed. And so then I sort of thought, maybe that was an achievement.
No doubt.
No, I don't deserve that. No. I perhaps ought to say that I did take the exam when I was 4 or 5 months pregnant, which probably helped because your sense of taste is that much more acute. And I wasn't tempted to actually drink. So I think some of my fellow students, you know, when they couldn't come up with what the wines were sort of drinking.
Okay. Why did you want to write the Oxford Companion to wine?
It was a huge challenge because I had to somehow fill 800 pages with two columns in each page with alphabetically listed entries of little articles of varying sizes that would cover the entire subject of wine. And we know how ramified it is. I mean, there's science, there's history, there's labelling, there's all the regions, there are the grape varieties. There's all the sort of miscellaneous stuff, you know, like tasting and labels and things like that. But I honestly think that my training in maths and philosophy helped because the bridge between maths and philosophy is logic. Mm-hmm. And so while I can no longer add up, I do have quite a logical brain. Mm-hmm. So I did look at wine and I kind of separated it into various topics. And then within the topics, various articles, and then started to find out, you know, it was great because I could contact famous historians and ask them if they could write, you know, the history of Greek poetry about wine sort of thing. And they quite liked that because it was wine is, you know, people think wine's fun. Mm-hmm. it was a wonderful experience, except that this was pre-email. So all of the contributions, and I wrote quite a lot of it, but the contributions, there were 300 contributors, I think. The contributions came in on paper, faxes or in on paper. So I have to say, and I think Nick can corroborate me, that whenever I've had a major book deadline hanging over me, and this latest one out last week is the fifth edition, so I've been through four editions, it's very bad for sleep. You wake up in the middle of the night and, you know, you suddenly think, oh, no, I forgot to do that. And I must link those. It's full of cross-references, you know. It's quite a challenge. But I was rewarded in the sense because it turned out when it came out in 94, it was Oxford University Press's bestseller, apart from their dictionary, which is incredible. Absolutely incredible. They gave me a sort of wonderfully leather-bound edition, you know, with gold on it to celebrate.
And then you also did the... Mireta has talked a lot about a television series that you did for the BBC in 95.
After the three series of the Wine Programme for Channel 4, which was a new channel in the UK in the 80s, we did a series of all around the world called Jancis Robinson's Wine Course, with each episode, I think there were 10 episodes, mostly devoted to a great variety. Yeah. And it was actually the last series the BBC ever produced that was actually shot on film as opposed to video. So it has a sort of special visual quality. But you remember something about it, don't you?
Yeah, because I grew up in Voss, small town, like you did, and we didn't have BBC, for sure. So I had to buy it on a video. And that summer, I bought it. I saw the whole series, and it's a lot of hours, 16 times. Which tells you a lot about how boring life was. And I especially remember Burgundy, because Burgundy was my first, also a little bit first love of wine. And I also remember thinking that, seriously, can anybody have that as a job? Because I didn't have Financial Times. You couldn't buy Financial Times in Voss at that time, I think. So I was like, can somebody just travel around the world tasting wine? And now I have like a similar job. Yeah.
So you're actually the reason that we're all here. In two ways. And now we will do some drinking.
Yeah.
Because that's why we're here. We're here to drink. Now, everybody got the wine in the glasses?
Okay.
You don't have? No?
No, I have, of course.
You have? Okay, that's good. You have beer?
Huh? I just had to destroy my taste.
Oh, you're like, that's what men do when they're in fine dining. They want a hamburger just as a waiting or a sausage or something like that. With a grill, a waiting sausage. That's your beer. I understand. That's good. I mean, everyone should do what they like. That's why we're here. So there's no guilt here. Okay. I know that when you guys taste wine, you just go fast through it, and then it seems some kind of easy, but none of us can do it after you. So I think if you slowly now can take us through this wine, academically correct, as a master of wine that you are.
Should I do a bit of it and then Moretti do a bit of it?
You guys work it out.
The interesting thing is that Thomas has the latest diktat from the Wine and Spirit Education Trust of how you really should taste wine according to them.
Yep.
So you can correct us.
I will
at
correct
the end.
So, Hubris.
So here's how I would start. The look of it. Hmm. Maybe you can do the nose of it, and I'll do the palate of it. But before then, in the old days, if it was a white wine, you would definitely be looking for any signs of brown, because in the old days, before there was low temperature cooling, quite often white wines were oxidized and they would turn brown. Nowadays, that hardly ever happens, unless they've been stored badly. So obviously no signs of worrying signs of brown. And it's a kind of deep straw, I'd say. And because this wine, I know, has had some red grapes in it, it will at one stage have had some kind of quite deep colour. Not deep red wine colour, but that will be why it's not kind of water white, because there's been some Pinot also in the blend to make it. So a kind of deep straw. And I will, with great perception, will see that it's actually sparkling. and technically, you're supposed to say whether the bead, the kind of the fizz, the size of the bubbles is a signifier of quality. So the smaller the bubbles, the better quality the wine. And as you know, if in a soda, it's big bubbles that disappear quite quickly. And in a top quality sparkling wine or champagne, it should be tiny bubbles that just carry on throughout the tasting experience. And these are pretty small bubbles, I think. You want, with any wine, to, when you're holding it, at that angle helps you see the colour at the rim, because sometimes the colour at the rim of a wine is completely different from the colour in the middle. At the moment, I don't think this particular one is, but certainly in a, particularly a red wine that's got some age, often the rim is quite pale, even if the middle of the wine is still quite a dark red. So I think, have I covered the look of it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah. According to my notes, you're pretty good.
Okay, right.
You would pass on today's exam.
Yeah, we'll go further on. She passed that hurdle too.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, you're going to talk about the nose. Yeah,
I think it's quite pronounced and youthful fruit intensity on a nose. It's not very closed. It has a lot of flowers, floral notes, rose water, peaches, nectarines.
And you stated that the intensity of the...
Yeah, it's very pronounced. It's very up there.
Yeah.
It's not...
So you don't have to put your nose all the way through the glass?
No, it's...
Down in the glass too?
Yeah.
But it helps to swirl a little, doesn't
it? Yeah. Yeah, so it's just by looking at it, you could, in my brain says this has red grapes, and when you smell it, you get it confirmed, I think. Yeah. So, yeah.
And as we all know, the nose is much, much more sensitive than the mouth in terms of detecting flavour. Which is why when you've got a cold and your nose is all stuffed up, you lose your appetite because you can't really taste anything. And in the mouth, what you're mainly doing is checking its vital statistics, things like sweetness, acidity, tannin or astringency, the kind of grippiness of it, sometimes saltiness. More and more wines today have a sort of little saline character to them. And the alcohol content of it, you can sometimes, decreasingly actually I find, but there was a moment when very alcoholic wines would leave a sort of hot taste at the back of the palate. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, that is, I find, decreasing, that phenomenon. So you want a nice mouthful that's going to put all of the taste buds in your mouth in touch with the wine. And if you are tasting, you would definitely spit it out. But if you're drinking, I don't think anyone's got a spittoon here. No? But we're obviously going to drink it. And so what we're going to be looking for is the balance between, particularly between any sweetness or apparent sweetness and the acidity, but also how chewy it is, because the chewier it is, generally the younger it is. So let's see if we think it's well balanced. Ooh, well done.
It's Tuesday. I told.
I think it is very well balanced. I think quite a lot of English sparkling wines that I come across, especially the young ones, are a bit tart. They I know they're going to age very well because the acidity will keep them going for a long time. But often when they're released, and we have so many producers of English sparkling wine nowadays, that they've all invested a lot of money, they've planted the vines, they have to wait 3 years before they produce any grapes, they make the wine, they've got to wait two years usually before the wine is matured in bottle. So they're desperate for cash. And so sometimes they release the wine a little bit early when it's still really too acid. But I don't think this is too acid at all, do you?
No.
I think it's got obvious fruit weight. Mm-hmm. It's not sweet, but it's not austere. A bit. I find some of those grower champagnes can be a bit austere, just not have enough fruit weight in the middle and not enough apparent sweetness. So I think it's a dry wine, but it's got a nice balance between fruit and acidity. I'm not getting that much astringency. I think it's ready to drink now. And of course, the big thing, so the two big quality indicators that we're looking for in the mouth are the balance that I've already talked about, and how long the wine lasts, the finish, the length on the palate. And the longer it lasts, the better quality the wine. In fact, there's a good argument to be put for drinking good quality wine, because good quality wine lasts a nice long time. So you can make there's a nice longer interval between mouthfuls. You can make a glass last longer. If you get cheap plonk, honestly, you have it might be quite smelly, because the cheap makers of inexpensive wine tend to put a lot of effort into the aroma.
Yeah.
But then it just disappears on the palate. It's just nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
And you say to yourself, was that really as inconsequential as that? And you have another mouthful. And so you drink it much faster. So my advice to you is to spend on wine.
Yeah.
So I just remind myself whether this lasts. I think it does. Yep. Mm-hmm. I think that's a jolly nice wine.
Yeah. So, and you now tell us what kind of wine it is?
So it is an English sparkling wine. And it's made in Hampshire, where they're very proud of the chalk that they have, which is, you know, champagne is built on chalk. So, ergo, they must be good at making copies of champagne. They do use exactly the same method as champagne, the so-called traditional method of maturing the wine in the bottle. And almost invariably, the same grapes go into English sparkling wine as champagne. Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, in varying different proportions. And, name of the winery is Black Chalk. No. We've had this massive investment in vineyards in England. Most of the production is sparkling wine as a copy of champagne, really. But with our hotter and hotter summers, a higher and higher proportion of English wine is now still, and some of it is actually pretty good.
How long will you think it will stay?
Yeah, so that's what you're supposed to say, isn't it? Yes, yeah. We missed that out.
Yeah?
I
was trying to do it a little bit discreet.
Subtle. Thank you, yeah. Very subtle. because there's such a lot of acidity, and my experience of English sparkling wine tells me that I would drink this any time over the next 4 years, maybe.
Yeah.
I was interviewed, someone came from Le Monde, the French newspaper, to interview me the other day, and Nick, who is much more hospitable than me, said, well, what are you going to give him to drink?
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't even thought of this, obviously. And so English sparkling wine was the obvious thing. He'd never tasted one before, which was exciting.
Yeah.
Frenchman, very keen on
of course.
Brought up in Burgundy.
So he
loved
have a
it,
choice.
I mean, I say, but yeah. it was from Nightimber, the producer of the very first good English sparkling wine. And it was actually a blend based on 2014. And I tasted it before, and I thought at 9 years old it was just slightly losing its fruit.
Okay.
But he of course, had no experience of English sparkling. He thought it was fabulous. So, job done.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Nå skal vi gjøre første blindsmakingen, da basert på det, den gjennomgangen som vi gjorde her nå. Den får dere I karaffel, og Merete, du får også det.
Blind tasting, I think, is like a sport. You've got to be in condition. Do you yeah. blind taste a lot?
No.
But to be in all fairness, we have to say also it's about resonating right. It's not yeah. necessarily just to pick the right.
No, I think what you're often doing, you're having a smell, and you're hoping for that bolt. Yeah, yes, yeah. that's yeah. what it yeah. is. And if you don't get yeah. that, then it's you've hard. Got to go through this tedious business of elimination. Mm. Can't be that. High acid, therefore, possibly this. Mm. But really what you want is the inspiration, isn't it?
Of course.
It? Yeah.
Now, you know, I've done competition. It's 13 years ago, so it's been a while. Yeah.
Okay, so what we'll do now is we will go through this wine. You will not say everything you think, because I will ask you some questions. And then I will show the audience the right answer, and you will be in the dark. So we'll sort of slowly freezing you out.
You have to be patient. Give me some time here.
I'm too eager now, you know. Okay, everybody's got wine?
Should we look at the color?
Hmm?
We start yeah. It's kind of straw yellow. It's clean and clear and everything. You have to check those boxes too, I guess.
But
I will go straight to the nose because it's so profound. And it's very obvious. It's a lot of things happening in the nose because when I just got it in the glass, it was had a lot of blackcurrant and gooseberries. And
Have you had the divine inspiration?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
I think you too did.
Hold it. So what are the aromas that you notice?
And then you find more wood notes, I think, and more tropical notes. But it started out as blackcurrant for me, and yeah.
Okay.
So it's changed very quickly in the glass.
Okay. Yeah. And then you'll taste it and then say something about the
very
palate.
Very concentrated, I think, on the palate. And nice acidity, nice length.
Would you say something about the
quality?
No, yeah, you can do that.
I in my mind has already decided where it's from.
Okay, but
it's not probably not.
We'll
right,
get back to that.
Yeah, but so in my mind, when I compare it with the rest of the area and. I think it's a very nice quality, and it's a quality that I think you get a lot of wine for the price. Yeah.
Okay. Is it a warm or cold climate?
I think this is a cold climate, yeah.
A cold climate?
Yeah.
I will...
check.
I'd like to know where your line comes.
That's a good thing. We will debate that afterwards because I think you're touching on something very important here. Okay, and then I will ask you for the grape.
Or grapes?
The grape or grapes, yes.
I think this is the Sauvignon Blanc, mainly with perhaps a slight touch of Semillon, but I'm not sure, but mainly Sauvignon Blanc, yeah.
Okay, would you say then a country and a region? I guess you have that from what you have said.
For me, this is a white Bordeaux, so France and Bordeaux.
Okay, and then oak or not?
Oak, yeah.
Yeah. And the year?
Oh.
How old is it? Ish?
I didn't think about that. I think it's around... It's not 18 vintage, because that would be warmer, I think, less acidity. So it could be 20 or 19, but I think it's approximately like 4 years old. Yeah. Hmm? 19 vintage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the price of this wine? The quality, what would you...
Between 270 kroner and 300, around that.
Okay.
What is the... What, can I see what
I will not reveal anything to you, but I will just say that you haven't made a shame of us.
No. Of us?
Yeah. We are a team, you know. And,
very good.
We will reveal the bottle when we come to the end of the night. You said cold climate, but you had some comments on that.
And yet you thought it was Bordeaux, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you would call that a cold climate.
Yeah.
And I was quite surprised when I saw your cards before, because, you know, I would think of a warm climate. Yeah, Bordeaux is warming up, that's for sure.
And Bordeaux now is actually warm.
But I suppose there isn't really one... line between cool and warm.
No. But you could argue that Bordeaux now is a warm climate.
What would you call Burgundy?
Yeah.
It
used to all normal back in the old days.
It was cool.
Yeah. And sort of the rule of thumb was that the old world was cold and then the new world was warm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Could you say?
Yes. Apart from Ontario, which would be cool.
So what are your thoughts of the warm summers that has been in Europe now the recent years?
And of course it's not just warming summers, but much more dramatic weather, isn't it? You know, floods, wildfires. And then every now and then you get a cool year like 2021. So it's not every single year. But, the style of wine is changing nowhere more than in Burgundy, which we keep talking about. And so the map of Burgundy... The map of the world of wine is changing all the time. Everyone's moving towards the poles or uphill to try and get cooler. Mm-hmm. In Burgundy itself, the Grand Cru were Grand Cru because they would ripen grapes reliably. Mm-hmm. Now, some of them are ripening grapes too much. And you've got the satellite areas of Burgundy that used to be thought of as being not very smart because they'd only ripen the grapes once every 3 or 4 years. Now they're producing wines with more freshness and arguably more typical character of Burgundy than like places like Saint-Aubin used to be thought of as being on the, not nearly as good as Chassagne or Pouligny or Meursault, but lovely wines coming from that slightly cooler area. Mm. And even Saint-Romain up in the hills is starting to be good. And then the Haute Côte, the higher bits of the Côte d'Or. I mean, that's a place to buy land now, I'd have thought. because everything's getting warmer and less characteristic. I mean, sometimes there are Burgundy musts that are 15% alcohol. Yeah. It's just unthinkable before. Mm-hmm. And I know a very well-known producer of Meursault, not Dominique Lafont, who told some friends of ours that he doesn't think he's going to be making wine in 20 years' time. It's just going to change so much. And, of course, Burgundy is very short of water. There's nowhere there's nowhere they can get water. All the they don't have sort of boreholes. And there's all of the available water goes to the Dijon or, the cities.
Burgundy was sort of in 2005, 4 or 5 was kept to more wine nerds, and then became really broad, and the prices really, really went sky high.
Yeah, I think because it's made in the famous wines are made in such small quantity, it was perfect for billionaires, because wine was, you know, along with your yacht, you get your wine cellar. And there are just more and more billionaires in the world who are interested in wine. And so I'm sure that has been a major factor in inflating prices.
Could there be a new Burgundy?
Well, yes, area? I think actually what's exciting is that there are a lot of young people coming into Burgundy who can't afford to buy land, because land in Burgundy is ridiculous, but can afford to buy grapes and rent a corner of a cellar. And so there are lots of new names. There are affordable Burgundies to be discovered.
Okay.
However, there is also Oregon, which is making some absolutely fabulous Pinot Noir. Germany is making better and better Spätburgunder. They went through a phase of making really too oaky wine, too ripe wines. But now they're really quite subtle and stuff. There are bits, cooler bits of Australia and New Zealand that are making really nice Pinot Noir. And, of course, there's the coast, the Pacific coast of California, which is much cooler than the rest of California. You know, Sonoma Coast, Santa Rita Hills in the south, Sonoma Coast in the north. You know, if you like Pinot Noir, there's an awful lot to choose from nowadays.
And even Britain.
Yeah, there's I've had one really impressive Pinot Noir. I don't know if you had Danbury Ridge. It's from Essex. No. It's from a very warm corner of England, which doesn't have as hardly any wineries, but people have been buying grapes from there for ages, knowing how good it is. And after our hotter summers, this outfit called Danbury Ridge, founded quite recently by a sort of finance guy from Hong Kong who was from the area and knew it. He's a very much hands-on type owner. They're making really a serious Pinot Noir. Okay. His winemaker was a Northern Irish amateur jockey who got fed up with the wet summers in Ireland and went and offered to do a vintage at William Selyem in Russian River Valley in California.
Okay, the American producer. Yeah,
and then got the bug in making lovely wine. Yeah.
Okay.
When people say to me, what's up and coming, which wine regions are up and coming, for some time now...
I said that now.
Okay. I've said Portugal and Greece. Because for the same reason.
Yeah.
They have fantastic grape varieties of their own.
Yeah.
Really wonderful array with their own characteristics. Their winemaking has got so much better, and both countries have lots of very ambitious, youngish wine producers. So and they're not yet discovered by the billionaires. So the prices are quite good.
So we'll keep it to ourselves. If you go on internet and you search for the biggest wine journalist, it comes up two names. It's you, your name, and Robert Parker. But it seems like you and Robert Parker have two very different directions or approaches to
wine. I think we have different palates, yes. The sad thing was that the world believed that he loved very big wines. And he was so punctilious a taster and so powerful that all throughout the world, people tried to make wines that they thought he would like, whether he did or not. And so it had a slightly skewing effect on the wines of the world for a while. But nowadays, what's exciting is that there are so many different styles and flavors and places that wine comes from. And there are people who are looking for those. One of the nicest things that I've observed is that in the 20th century, wine producers all wanted to make a copy of red Bordeaux and white Burgundy, and that was it. And now they want to make what's most suitable for their vineyard with ideally local grapes and not a copy of something else.
Yeah. Okay. We ready for the last blind tasting? Da kan vi skjenke den siste røde vinen. There's a TV program in Norway. We have a Norwegian chef. You know Eivind Hellström? No. No. Because all we know is that he's world famous. But, but okay.
Perhaps if I saw the name written down.
Yeah. No, but there was a... He has a program, and he were to blind taste from a black glass, and he changed the white and the red wine.
He mistook them.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that has been... a lot of people ask, why is that possible?
I think it's actually quite possible, particularly, funny enough, Burgundy is a theme here, but particularly with Burgundy, particularly if you serve the wines at the same temperature.
Yes.
Chardonnay is very closely related to Pinot Noir, anyway, same mm-hmm. family. And the structure of a light red Burgundy is very similar to the structure of a white Burgundy.
So it has to be light, little tannins.
Yeah, low tannin, a little bit of acidity, freshness, and, mm-hmm. and all the rest. Made very similarly, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I can fully understand it. But our older daughter... It's very annoying because she says that she doesn't like red wine.
Okay.
And I think that's ridiculous, especially since I've got so much red wine to give away. It's, you know, all the things that I taste at home. I've got bottles. I mean, you must have seen.
Yeah,
my neighbours, they love you. Me.
It's the same, same with Meretta.
Yeah. So we all went together on a little trip at New Year, and I said to Julia, look, I'm going to blindfold you, and I'm going to give you a red and a white.
Okay.
And I bet you won't be able to tell the difference.
Okay.
So I deliberately chose a sort of white Burgundy-ish and a red Burgundy-ish and served them at the same temperature. She's a very good taster. She got them right.
She got them right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's still only drinking white wine. And she spread this gospel to our younger daughter as well, so she will only drink white wine.
Oh. But they know who their mother is.
Yeah, yes. But the boy in between is he's keeping up. Yeah.
We're ready, Meretta.
Yeah.
You'll start taking us through this wine.
Hmm. It's not so easy as the white one.
No?
No.
But not everything can be that in life.
When you just start looking at the color is slightly garnet, means that it's slightly brownish, starting to get brown. It's not like purple and pink anymore.
Little bit, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's see-through, it's not so dark in color, which gives, immediately my mind starts to think about grapes that has less color, that has an oxidatively, or who oxidizes easily, because then it gets brownish quite quick. Yeah. On the nose, it's younger than it looks on the color, I think. It's quite pronounced and very fruity, like strawberries and some flowers here, and also a little bit boiled strawberries, that it's a bit warm strawberries, that gives the indication of a little bit warmer climate for me. Not sure yet, but that's what I'm thinking.
Okay. And then...
It has... you haven't asked about oak yet, but...
No, I will ask. Yeah. So, but now you can taste it.
Thank you. Yeah. It's quite... The tannins are quite pronounced. When you look at it, you think that this is a light-bodied wine, but it's not...
Mm-hmm.
The tannins dry out a little bit. Alcohol is sort of on the higher part, I think above 14, 13.5, above 14, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's young, but it's been made of grapes that age quickly, sort of.
Okay.
Balanced acidity. But I think it's like Europe, but I think it's warmer Europe.
Okay. So. We'll say warm or cold climate.
Yeah, warm in Europe.
Warm in Europe? Okay. That's a good good answer, though. Yes. But we will also, on this one, we will get back to this. The grape?
It's between two. I think it's Grenache.
Okay. No.
What was the other one?
She was laughing at my poker face.
I was thinking about Cinsault, but then it wouldn't be southern part of France. I would go to Lebanon or something like that. Yeah.
Why are you saying this? You're saying this because of the color and the...
Yeah, more the aromas, I think, okay. More than the color. The color is a little bit Grenache for me, yeah.
Okay. So you say Grenache?
Mm-hmm. So it was not.
And the country...
Nobody was...
The country region?
I think it's southern part of Rome. Yeah.
Southern part of Rome.
Yeah.
Southern part of Rome?
Rome. Oh. The Rhone Valley. Not Rome, no. Yeah, Lazio, yeah. No.
Okay. Oak or not?
Oak, yeah.
And the year?
2017, 18, around, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And the price?
Now I feel like I've done so many mistakes here. But, okay.
I bet you'll get the price right.
Price, just under 400, around 400.
Yeah.
What is it? Ah.
So, Miss Master of Wine, would you comment on the logic that you?
I will comment. Yeah. My main comment is thank God I refuse to do this. And secondary, I think Maurizio has done the most fabulous job.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially with the work. I think on that red wine, knowing what it is, the only thing that I would have picked up on was maybe the slight tannin, slight astringency, which, so actually there are quite a few Grenaches that have got that, but no Sansos, I don't think. They're sort of softer, aren't they? Yeah. But I think, you know, I absolutely see why you said what
could
you
have been
said.
A Sino Marvel, perhaps.
Yes! Oh.
Ikke dumt.
Could have been.
Yeah.
Because
now
that, you know, sometimes you need some time to get the, you know, the old machine.
Yeah,
and
you're,
boop, and the,
you're
the,
pulled, you're taken on one path.
Yeah. And
because
and you try and make everything fit what you've decided it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We can say you changed.
Yeah, we can say I changed.
Yeah,
we'll... a little bit. You decide.
No, it's okay. Do you think there anything more that we have to comment on, or we should just reveal the wine?
I think we should reveal the wines.
Okay, so we'll reveal. Can we have the bottles up here? Merete, would you guess what the first wine was? Do you have a producer and the...
I think it's from a very well-known Bordeaux family, Lurton. So,
the white wine
could be Cohans Lurton, could be Roche Morin. I don't. Yeah,
it's Roche Morin.
Yeah, okay.
Oh.
And it's interesting. You said I think it's Sauvignon, but perhaps with a little bit Semillon.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a characteristic of those Lurton whites is that they taste as though they've got some Semillon in.
Yeah.
But André Lurton, who died in, I think, 18 or 19, wouldn't countenance Semillon. So even his Coin Sloton, which always tastes like 100% Semillon, is actually 100% Sauvignon. But now that his son Jacques Lurton, who's taken over, he's starting to plant Semillon. He's doing, and he's introduced, I think this was his first vintage, the 2020, and he's started to introduce trendy amphorae as well as oak, like so many wine producers around the world. So it'll be interesting to see how it evolves. That evolves. And it comes from Pessac Léognan, the classy, dry white Bordeaux appellation, just outside Bordeaux.
And the Semillon was, did you mention it because of the slight, a little
the fatty,
oily...
The richness
of it, because I could feel that.
Yeah.
More than a normal Sauvignon Blanc would have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we'll do the red wine.
If it's Greece, I'm impressed, yeah.
Okay, so... And you said, because actually the climate there, you said...
Warm Europe.
Warm Europe.
Yes.
But that winery is on, the wines are
quite
from
high.
Quite high, so it's...
So it's a slight fallacy. We think, don't we, that all of Spain and Greece are very warm. But actually they've got some quite high, very high vineyards.
And which this is 600 metres high?
Yeah, which is, above what, technically...
They have a ski resort.
The textbooks say, above 500 meters, you can't ripen the grapes, sort of thing. So
it's a cold.
Yeah, so it's a Nausa from the north of Greece, Kyria Yannis Xenomavro.
Yeah, of course. I should have known.
Of course.
It's there for you.
And it's a 2020.
Yeah.
I think it's proof that Greece is making really interesting wine.
And also the price that you guessed, it's a compliment to the wine.
Yeah, it's 210.
Yeah. That's why you should buy Greek wine.
Yes, exactly. Sometimes people talk about, I don't know how popular Piemonte wine is here, but sometimes people talk about Xenomavro as being the Nebbiolo of Greece.
Yeah.
And there are certain similarities, like the colour fading and going to orange and that little more tannin than expect.
Yeah. Mm. Could some of them could be more to... Pinot than Nebbiolo, but some of them are, I think, this style, that is,
This was quite, the tannins were
slight
quite...
Slight sort of graininess on the end.
Yeah.
I think it's a very nice wine.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
You've been a brilliant audience.
Really. Thank you so much, Jancis Robinson, for coming.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And big applause also for Merete to do the...
Thank you.
Og tusen takk for at dere kom, det var veldig hyggelig å snakke.
Thank you. That was a brilliant performance.
Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Du har nå hørt en podcast fra Dagens Næringsliv.